are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
To Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Today, we're going to pull back the covers to discuss the importance of educating parents about what works and what doesn't work within the family system in today's culture and provide information on how to change one's current parenting paradigm if it's not working. Our special guest today is Gary Hees. Gary is the clinical director at Spring Ridge Academy. He holds a master's degree in psychology from the University of Houston, Clear Lake, and is a licensed professional counselor in Arizona and Texas. Gary has extensive background in the presentation and facilitation of the experiential personal growth workshops that are an integral part of the holistic approach of Spring Ridge Academy. Gary, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Ah, hi, Alan, and thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really glad to have you on. I had a chance to learn quite a bit about Spring Ridge, and so far I like what I've heard. Now, one of the things that I did read, Gary, is you refer to parenting as a lost art. Tell me a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, Alan, what we've seen, Spring Ridge Academy is a behavioral health boarding school for adolescent girls. It gives us, since we draw girls from all over the country, it gives us sort of a microcosm of what's going on in the culture. Typically, we're dealing with girls that are about 13 to 17 years old. So when we deal with that and their families, the picture that we've gotten really is that what's going on out there is the busyness of our lives, the busyness of our culture, the assault, if you will, and I use that word deliberately, on young women through some of the media outlets that are out there right now, have combined to produce almost sort of a wasteland for the development of young women. We've looked at how they are parented and how that goes on, and there's many more challenges culturally and professionally for parents nowadays to meet in order to be on the same page and be the combined parenting force that in the past wasn't that difficult to produce.
Now, when you mentioned, you said the assault on them, are we talking about the media? Are we talking about, the commercialization of nearly everything that's out there, or a little bit of everything?
Well, in our opinion, we're really talking about both of those things, the commercialization of everything that's going on, but more and more in the media. And I think parents would agree with me if they've been watching the media carefully. What we see is younger and younger young women portrayed in sexy roles, if you will, being portrayed as being sexy or sexualized at an earlier and earlier age. The influence in some ways of MTV/VH1, when you look at some of those things and look at a lot of the music videos, unfortunately, many of the music videos that are out there are portraying women in a dominated role, in a role of sexualization, in a role of being secondary to males, that really flies in the face of a lot of the good work that was done in the 70s and 80s promoting equality of women and empowerment of young women.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point when you bring up the MTV portrayal. And I just had this conversation with one of my own teenage sons, from the standpoint of he was talking about a particular rapper who in his angry rap and in the video, he portrays himself as having been now victimized by his wife, that she has now taken his money and taken his kids and done all of these things. And I said, well, think about it. I said, think about his other videos, where essentially in his other videos, his entire message is, it's all about the money, it's all about the sex, and in his videos, he degrades women. And now he's upset because of the fact that she's left, so that gives him a reason to be angry to now do another angry video. I mean, it's interesting the irony of the fact that he's portraying women in this very demeaning fashion, and now is angry that one of them has left him.
Well, Alan, I would have to agree with you on that. It's, you know, being offended when the person that you objectify decides to turn around and do something and take advantage of certain things for herself or take advantage of certain situations, ironic to say the least.
Exactly. Now, I noticed, I mean, in your approach to the art of parenting, you state that family involvement is the single most important factor for influencing change with today's youth. Please explain to us why you feel this is so necessary.
Well, here's the thing. What happens very, very often is that over time, and this basically comes back to a little bit of how we view development and how we view individuals and what they bring to the table in their relationships and their families. Each of us develops believing certain things about the world, about other persons, and about themselves. And they bring all of that to the table. How we develop that usually is in our own family of origin. So this is one of the things where what we call in the field of marriage and family therapy, multi-generationalism takes hold. That is, none of us, and Alan, I know you have kids, I have two kids who are grown now, a boy and a girl, none of us, when those kids were born and we were present for that birth, we didn't get the book.
You got that
so
right.
Yeah, we did not get the book that told us how to raise them. So what are we left with? We're left with doing the best that we can and that we can figure out. And when it comes right down to it, we fall back on the patterns of our own parenting and the way that we've been raised. Right. In that way, a lot of things are passed forward that we bring into present parenting. Some of them are not positive. Some of them are.
Exactly.
The ones that are not positive, of course, negatively impact our family and end up, and we see this all the time, Alan, end up actually impacting the parents' opinion of themselves and their own ability to parent. Part of what we have to do is get the family involved in a number of different ways. If you can imagine a Venetian blind in front of a child and let's say their dad, and they're trying to have a conversation and look at each other, and on both their parts, the Venetian blind is only partly open. So they can't really see who that other person is. What it's left to is their imagination and their experience of that person. So based on that, based on those assumptions, they deal with that person expecting certain behavior to come back from them and certain things to happen when they relate to them. What we try to do is take down the blinds, if you will, open them fully, in fact, pull them up where the two individuals are actually looking at each other and no longer are dealing with their preconceptions about the other person. The other thing that we have to do, and it's very, very difficult in today's climate, where we have both parents working in order just to make ends meet in a lot of situations, what we have to do is get both parents on the same page.
Right.
When I say that, Alan, the best way for me to illustrate that would be to talk for a second about a lady named Diana Baumrind. She came up with a principle called parenting styles back in the late 60s when she was doing her doctorate work. And what we see is her work really reflects what we see. Typically, one parent is going to be more permissive. That is, they're going to agree more with the child. They're going to align more with the child. And the other parent is going to be what Balmron referred to as more authoritarian, the one who basically says, hey, I've had it with this. It's my way or the highway. This is the way it's going to be. The discussion is absolutely over with. What happens with those two parents is the child very quickly learns which parent to go to in order to get what they want, in order to empower themselves and falsely empower themselves at a very, very young age. And when those two parents are split, as we call it, in that way, really what happens is the child ends up being able to control or manipulate each of the parents against each other and manipulate in order to get what they want. That false sense of empowerment that we see kids pick up on really leads to them, and this may sound a little off, but I bet your audience will catch on to it very quickly. What it really leads the kid to be is scared, because they know that they're 13, 14, 15 years old, not capable of making their own decisions in the world, yet because they're able to split their parents, they end up in a position of power to do just that.
Well, and I think that's a great point. And I think that what they're in needing at that point is the structure. I mean, they know at some deep level that they do need structure in their life, and they're realizing that they figured out how to manipulate a way to get around that. Now, and you, when you mention it about the parents being split, now, how much more damaging can that be when the parents are divorced and the child's able to do it from two different households?
Well, it can be more damaging, actually. You know, we have had great success, Alan, with divorced parents and in working with their kids based on a couple of factors. The divorced parents, what we really see there is we have a lot of success in working with them when we're able to get them on the same page as far as parenting. In other words, the way that we come at them is to look at them and sit them both down and say, look, we want to work with both of you in relation to your child. What we're looking for here is an alliance through which the two of you will parent in a similar way, having similar rules in both of the households. We look at them and tell them, we're not here to try and make you get back together. We're not here to try and make you really like and appreciate each other. What's really called for here is a simple degree of mutual respect and agreement that the child is going to be parented consistently in both houses. Well, naturally. Go ahead, Alan.
No, I was just going to ask you, and I agree completely with what you're saying, but how do you deal with the fact that it's very possible in those situations that one parent is going to believe that they're being told that they've been doing it wrong? I mean, so, you know, I understand the philosophy of what you're saying. I believe in it completely, but I think, you know, how do you deal with the situation where, as you're now explaining, this is how you're going to do it, more than likely it's going to be closer to one of the parenting styles than the other. How do you deal with the fact of either having the one parent who feels like theirs is not being honored, which then might feel more insecure about it, or on the other hand, the other parent that decides they're going to gloat about the fact of, see, I was right?
Gotcha. Alan, I mean this seriously, even though it may sound a little humorous, in the beginning, the word is carefully.
Yeah.
It has to be dealt with carefully. What we emphasize is a systemic approach. And for those in your audience who have ever dealt with a marriage and family therapist or dealt with someone trained in marriage and family therapy, which is the way I'm trained and which is the approach of our whole program, what they know about that is that it differs in a lot of ways from the linear approach of traditional psychology. We look at things systemically. We don't look for a beginning point and end point for who did what that resulted in a bad result down the line, but rather we look at the interplay between individuals. So the first thing we come from, Alan, is everybody has been doing the very best job that they possibly could. The phrase that I use with a lot of our parents and that everybody in our program really uses with them is there's never been one day where you got up in the morning and said to yourself, how can I screw up my kid today? Parents have not done that, and they don't get up that way. That's not their intent. What we emphasize to them is how relational injury can take place between them, how their child can filter what they have to say due to their own self-limiting beliefs and end up hearing something exactly, in some cases, exactly opposite of what the parent meant when the parent said something. Now, when it comes down to the parents themselves, I want you to hear that sometimes you do end up with a parent who is doing most of what isn't working. And that's the way that we phrase this, Alan, is we're looking for what doesn't work and what does work. But rarely, if ever, have I run into a case where one parent is doing something that doesn't work and the other parent is simply doing everything very, very well. If nothing else, what you mentioned, the mere fact that the other parent gloats or the other parent has that resentment, kids are wonderful little radar stations, and they absolutely pick up on that attitude. And when that attitude is present in the other house, what really has to be done and the work that has to be done is to ask those two people to both sit down and begin to clear up resentments between themselves so that energy isn't out there on the part of either parent. So, again, what we're looking for is saying, hey, these are the choices you made. Here's the pattern of behavior. You're not bad. The kid's not bad, and in fact, your ex-partner is not bad, but what you've been doing between the three of you does not work, so let's restructure how that happens.
Well, it makes good sense. Now, walk us through a little bit from the standpoint of sort of the ideal child that you're working with now, the ones that are gaining the most benefit at Spring Ridge Academy.
Gosh, most of the time, this is going to look like this is going to be a course, a young woman who is probably between the ages of 14 and 17. More than likely, she has become more and more oppositional with her parents. And when I say oppositional, basically, that could be expressed in a lot of different ways. Simple disrespect. All the way to throwing fits, breaking things, throwing objects. We occasionally have a girl who has become assaultive with one of her parents, usually her mom, because she'll perceive that that is a lot safer parent to be assaultive with. The girl usually will have some degree of depression, some anxiety going on, although it may not evidence itself readily. It's usually there right below the surface. Usually they're going to be at least experimenting with, if not becoming more and more involved in alcohol and drugs. And unfortunately, a fairly significant percentage of our girls have been physically or sexually assaulted, usually under the influence of drugs or alcohol. So we're going to be dealing with a lot of different things that will take us into the areas of grief, into the area of trauma resolution and trauma work, into the area of possible addictions and substance uses, and then the all-important area of the family work. What we find with these girls, Alan, and it is just absolutely crystal clear when we look back at our record, the people and families who do best within our program or any other program are the families where both parents show up and do their work right alongside the girl. The families where the girl says to herself, I may be in the middle of nowhere in Arizona, but my mom and dad are showing up. My mom and dad are making difficult admissions about what they did that didn't work. And my mom and dad are owning their behavior, and they really end up, these kids end up with a wonderful model on the part of their parents for how they should be accountable and then take responsibility going forward for their behavior.
Well, Gary, I got to tell you, I think you're bringing up a great point, and it's sort of been a pet peeve for me over the last 30 years of the situation where the parent just thinks they're going to drop off their child and it's now your responsibility. You know, that what the child thinks at that point in time is that, you know, wait a minute, they're saying it's all on me, you know, that somehow I've created all of this stuff. Now, what do you say to the statement? And this is a statement that we get fairly frequently when transporting a young person to a program like yours. And that is,
right,
the child says, this is their quote, wait a minute, you don't understand. You're taking the wrong person. There's nothing wrong with me. I come from a dysfunctional family.
Okay. When a kiddo says that to me, mm-hmm, I look at them and basically look them in the eye and say, I need you to hear something. You're the one who's here in the program. Some of your behaviors have been extreme. But I do absolutely understand that everyone in your family has some work to do and has some change to make. I'll look at them and even ask them, do you have siblings? How many siblings do you have? And let's say a girl says, yes, I have a younger brother. I'll look at her and say, well, then let me tell you something in general right now that I believe. I believe that you have been doing 25% and maybe a little bit more than that, but generally about 25% of what's been going on in the family. Other family members have contributed to what's happening in the family as well. It's going to take a lot of time for us to sort that out. Then most of the time, Alan, I've had a chance to read their background, either a psych eval, or I've been able to hear from a professional like you or an educational consultant who's given me some background on the kid, and I'm able to look at them and say, but here's what was going on. You were sneaking out. You were coming home drunk. You were even in cars driving around drunk. Your parents did what they needed to do to make sure that you were safe. They took you out of a really risky situation. I want you to hear that's another reason that you're here. But when we start working with you and your family, this isn't a situation of, hey, everything is about you and everything that was going on in the family was done by you.
Okay, well, and that's a great point. And let me ask you to do this. Let me ask you to critique one of the things that I say or that I have my staff say. And at the time in which they make that statement, our comeback is, you know, that's the beauty of the program that you're going to, is they can help you deal with being raised in a dysfunctional family if that's the case. So,
well, really, I don't see much wrong with saying what you're saying, Alan.
Okay.
If the kiddo perceives that they're in a dysfunctional family, and most of the time these guys are very, very clear, and they do see what the dysfunction is. For instance, and let's be clear with your audience, dysfunction has gained a lot of, it's gained a lot of weight. A lot of times people think of that as one parent being falling down drunk on the couch, not showing up for work, and that's dysfunction. Well, it is. That's an extreme case. A lot of times what the kids will see and what these girls tell us when they come in is the dysfunction they talk about is, you know, my mom does all of the parenting. When my mom gets really frustrated, she yells at dad, and then dad steps in and yells at me. So the only parenting I've been experiencing from dad is when he gets frustrated enough to come and yell at me because mom has gotten frustrated with him and yelled at him.
Exactly.
See, that's another whole level of dysfunction. And the message that the girl gets there is, one, my parents are split. Two, my dad thinks that my mom can't do an adequate job. Three, My dad is going to step in and tell me the way the cow ate the cabbage. But guess what? He's going to be back at work and out of the house most of the time, so I don't have to listen to him anyway. These girls and kids in general recognize when that kind of dysfunction is going on in a family, and they recognize that it doesn't work.
Well, exactly, and I think you can add one more thing to that. I think they realize that much of the frustration that's being projected to them in that situation is dad's frustration with mom. It's like, I just need to do this to get her off my back, not that he's actually really engaged in the activity of what the daughter's doing. I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, and for us, Ellen, we view both parents as being very, very vital with a kiddo. I think there's a reason that there's always been two parents, or that traditionally two parents have been involved with a kiddo. When one parent is involved with them, they can raise them very well and very successfully. It puts a lot of stress on that single parent in a case like that.
Mm-hmm.
But with these kiddos, a lot better corral, if you will, could be put around them and put around their activities if both parents are equally involved and the child perceives that both of them care about the parenting rather than one parent critiquing the other.
Yeah, I certainly agree. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I've got a guest question that has, a question for the guest that has come in from one of our listeners. Again, I want to tell everybody we appreciate you emailing these questions in. We will be right back. We are talking with Gary Hees, and we're going to talk a little bit about someone who has sent something in that their 13-year-old daughter is now starting to argue with pretty much everybody in the family. We'll be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back. We are talking with Gary Hees of Spring Ridge Academy. And the question that we had that came in from one of our listeners says, my daughter, who is 13, has been starting arguing with us and with her brother and older sister for the last year or so, creating so much stress in the family. As parents, we feel that we may be facing more serious problems as she has recently been escalating these events to more screaming matches and has started throwing things. So far, nothing of value and no one has been injured. Past restrictions, which has become her middle name, have not done much good. What do you suggest we do?
Oh, gosh. Well, the first thing that I would recommend that they do is find a good marriage and family therapist. Try that approach first. I mean, typically, for me at least, my experience tells me that when a kid is arguing with everybody, when there's that kind of stress, she's not feeling heard, number one. Probably no one else in the family is feeling heard if she's screaming at them. The screaming matches and throwing things absolutely indicate the level of frustration that's going on in the family. This can be very, very typical of somebody who would head to our program. Sometimes you can address this, if you're lucky enough to catch it early on, with an outpatient marriage and family therapist. The problem that you run into with that sometimes is that typically the frequency is going to be about once a week. The entire family needs to be involved in that therapeutic process, especially since the screening is going on toward the brother and sister, toward the siblings as well. And involving the whole family in an outpatient process like that is sometimes very challenging. What we look at, the other alternative, is to look at and maybe seek a program such as Spring Ridge Academy. What we think of ourselves as is a contrived developmental crisis, that there are things that have developed in the family, there are individual development on the part of the daughter, that really there are some holes in that development and some lack of communication going on in the family. If we can intervene on that early enough, sometimes we can stop that. The problem is that once things have begun to be thrown and screaming matches have become the norm in the house, very often that's a difficult trend to turn around. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do need to consider seeking an alternative, like a therapeutic boarding school, where you simply get a cooling off period by separating the family and cooling down the stress within the family, and then begin to do family work with it. But the first thing I would do if I was this family would be I would contact a good, reputable marriage and family therapist. I would do whatever it took to have the whole family involved in the therapy. And if they don't get an effect pretty soon with the type of behavior that's going on, the screaming, the throwing of things, if they don't get some sort of mediation of that kind of behavior in a fairly short period of time, I'd advise them to get in touch with an educational consultant and seek that educational consultant's advice on what's going on in the family and what they would advise as far as possible placement in a program.
Well, Gary, I think that's really wise advice. And again, if anybody out there is seeking that kind of help, if you do not know somebody, you can go to our website. We have a network of therapists and educational consultants. If you give us where you're at geographically, we will refer you to somebody in your area that can help. Now, Gary, tell us.
Alan, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and then, Gary, tell us a little bit about your parent and family workshops, a little bit about how they work. Is it something that starts before the child comes in? Is it something that's done while you have a child at the academy? And is it then followed through and done after the child leaves the academy?
Gotcha. The workshops themselves, there are actually four that the kids go through that explore different things. The first one is challenge. The second is action. The third is results. The fourth is really a period of time that we call commitment. Challenge is exactly what its name implies. Challenge is an educational experiential seminar that's designed for individuals, be they adults or be they the girls, to identify and understand the factors that contributed to the outcomes that they've been getting in their lives, and to allow them the opportunity to look at their patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving that have led them to the results that they've gotten in their life now. The action goes farther in that it allows the individual to examine what they would like to have in their life and to look to the future and actually, if you will, make a commitment to themselves about what their pattern of experiencing life from then on is going to be. The two family workshops are actually, Alan, my absolute favorites. Okay. In the first family workshop, what we call Family One, real original name, right? Mm-hmm. What we call Family One is centered around doing what we call family sculpting. This is the work of a lady named Virginia Satir. I've enjoyed Satir's work, and I think it's very, very valuable. Imagine, if you can, having had the kiddo in our environment and able to do work on her own as well as do telephonic family therapy for a period of 3 to 6 months before attending the Family One workshop. And then walking into the Family One workshop, having siblings come along, as long as they are of an age to tolerate doing the kind of work that we do. And we usually think that's around 10 or 11 to have them involved. And what we do, and the centerpiece of that workshop, is family sculpting. In family sculpting, we literally take the time with one of our therapists facilitating smaller family groups. We take the time to let each and every family member, including siblings, set up the family and space them physically and have them in physical poses or taking physical actions that depict and generally describe how they saw the family at the time right before the girl came to Spring Ridge Academy. Mm-hmm. When we do that, what we end up with is all kinds of aha moments popping all over the group. Mm-hmm. Dads and moms looking up going, I never knew you felt that way. Moms and dads depicting their child perhaps being folded up on the floor because they were so scared that if the child's behavior, if their daughter's behavior continued, that they would get that dreaded call in the middle of the night that said that she was severely injured or even dead. We have girls during that process look back at their parents and literally begin to cry because they now are in the place for the first time to really look at their parents and say, you know what, they weren't trying to control me. They weren't trying to simply be in charge and be a bully. They were scared to death I was going to die. And they are in a better place and able to hear that within that multifamily environment. And Alan, the centerpiece, and I tell you, any of us would tell you this who have done this workshop at Spring Ridge, the centerpiece is without a doubt the siblings, mm-hmm. especially the younger ones. We have 11 and 12 and 10-year-old siblings get up there and arrange the family, and the truthfulness, you could cut it with a knife. These kids just set up the family and say, this is what it is. This is how I saw it. And they're just as honest as the day is long. And it really benefits the family. And, of course, the added benefit is any family like this, and Alan, you've seen the same thing when you go pick up kids and you transport kids and you talk to them. These families have believed for a long time we're alone. We're the only family this happens to. Everybody else on my block looks wonderful. Mm-hmm. We must be the only family that goes through this. And they're able to sit in a workshop with other families and go, you know what, we aren't alone. We do share these things in common. What they did in their sculpt is exactly what was happening in my family, and I understand it better now having seen them do it. Well, the second workshop is Family 2. Family 2, of course, comes later, a few months after Family 1, and really is the place where we begin to turn the corner and begin to talk about and actively coach the family toward your daughter is coming back home now. She's going to be an average teenager. She's going to have average teenage behavior, but the radical type behavior that you saw before, we aren't going to be seeing in the household, and we won't see on the part of other family members as well. So Family 2 really focuses us toward experiential exercises and didactic exercises where the family begins to plan a purpose, begins to establish mutual family values that everyone has agreed upon, and begins to establish a pattern of living that says when we get in conflict, the very first thing that we're going to do is turn back and look at our purpose and our values and see if our behavior right now is in alignment with those. That's how we're going to intervene on ourselves as a family.
Now, these seminars, are these only done on campus, or are these things that are also done in other parts of the country? Because, again, I mean, this is an international show. It's going all over the world. Parents that are listening and they're hearing this, how might they best deal with it if they're saying, well, you know, that sounds great, but they're in, you know, Arizona. How do we get involved in that and continue to thrive in this type of environment?
Well, they can look for workshops such as those that might be close to their home. But I can tell you, they're fairly few and far between. Alan, you've been in this as long as I have. You remember the era back in the late 80s and early 90s when there were lots of personal growth workshops out there. But even at that time, there were few, if any, for the family.
Right.
Some of our workshops we have made available and open for others to inquire about and others to participate in, such as the Parent Challenge and so forth. Mm-hmm. We've talked about perhaps opening up the family workshops. But you see, here's the rub for us. These workshops build on each other. In Parent Challenge, we establish common communication and common terminology, a common language, if you will, that the family goes forward with. So most of the time, we're providing these and doing them only on campus in Arizona only for the families that we're involved in. Although we have had outside families attend a number of these trainings, not the family training yet. Going out and outreaching and thinking about bringing those workshops on the outside of Spring Ridge is something that we've thought about and that we're still talking about. Logistically, we have challenges that we'd have to overcome. Lost Art of Parenting really is the first, that seminar and going out and disseminating it was really our first foray into having, if you will, an outreach program, not simply an inpatient program. So we're still thinking about it, Al. Unfortunately, the answer to your question directly is those resources are hard to find. I would think in the community where they may be available again might be through your local or state branches of marriage and family therapist associations or through the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. That would be a good place to begin to look.
Well, while we're on the subject of workshops, we have another listener question, and it's somewhat of a question and somewhat of a comment, so let me read that one as well. It says, my husband and I joined a parenting workshop last year. We were able to listen to the experiences of other parents with similar age teens. As good as we felt the workshop was, it just did not translate well back at home. We still did not achieve the depth of conversation with our kids that we were hoping to achieve. Do your events include several sets of parents and their children all together? If so, do the kids actually open up with other family groups present?
Yeah, let's take those in two halves, if we could, Alan. The first half about joining the parenting workshop and not achieving the depth of conversation with the kids that they were hoping to achieve. My experience, even with our workshops, workshops are wonderful things. They are a unique environment with an atmosphere all their own where there are people sharing the common problem that brought them to the workshop or the common challenge that brought them to the workshop. And they're able to get together, look at each other, say we're not unique, and then go forward. What makes our workshops work is the preparation that we're able to do beforehand and the processing that we're able to do about everything that happened in the workshop afterwards. So what I would say to the listener is don't skip workshops. Don't skip the parenting workshops. But what's important is be working with a good marriage and family therapist beforehand. Outline what the issues are. Go to the workshop and then bring back into therapy what you learned in the workshop for further processing and for further communication straightening, if you will, between the two of you or between the family members. It's the prep beforehand and especially the follow-up afterward, in my opinion, that makes the aha moment that you experience in a workshop become a lasting paradigm change for you as you go forward in life. Now, the second part of the question, the events do include lots of sets of parents and their children. Typically, when we do a family workshop, we're going to have between 15 and 20 families there. So there's going to be 15 to 20 families, which roughly translates to somewhere between 50 up to maybe 70 or 75 individuals, once you count siblings and everyone else. And do the kids open up? They absolutely do. What we do is basically, I do an example sculpt with everyone in the workshop in a large circle. Mm-hmm. I ask a family if they're willing to do that, if they're willing to volunteer to do that, and we do a model, and it shows everyone what it's going to be like, what it looks like, and what goes on. Plus, they're able to begin that process of identifying, hey, I'm not unique. Yes, this family is like mine, and yes, what they depicted went on in my family too. Then we split up into multiple groups, usually five different groups, with three to four families per group. And within these small family groups, they do the exercises. And again, what I would say is, yeah, do the kids open up? You bet. And to be quite frank, most of the time, the siblings will open up just as much as the girl who has been in treatment at our facility, if not more. It's like, it's almost, Alan, like these siblings have been waiting for a chance to be seen and heard, and to hear what their experience was. And boy, when they get it, they jump on it.
And, you know, that's the vision that I was getting. As you were saying that, the picture that came to my mind was just that, that a lot of this attention has gone on this one sibling who has been in the program, and that the others have seen that there was a lot of attention that went to them, and this is their opportunity to really go in and speak their piece and how this may have affected them.
Well, it really is. And Alan, the other part of what we do with that, that's on the first day of the workshop, and in the succeeding days of the workshop, we begin to process back and forth different things that came out in the sculpt between dyads within the family. So if there is that situation where a sibling absolutely felt like a lost child in the family because of all the attention being put on the girl who was actually acting out more vigorously within the family, that's something that they're going to get a chance to sit down and talk about. Meaning, when I say talk about, the therapist and I will be circulating within the room while these exchanges and processing is going on. If they run into a jam or run into a tough place, their hand goes up and we go over and we get to actually help facilitate. In a lot of cases, a younger sibling looking at an older one saying, you know, I'm angry at you. I'm angry that all the attention went to you. I'm angry that the attention is still going to you. And what I want is a sister who's there who really likes me. I'm angry that you treated me like I was inconvenient. I'm angry that you were irritated with me. And the truth is that underneath my anger, I miss you. And I'm sad that I don't have with you what I had when we were both younger.
Well, you know what? I just glanced over at the time. We are just about out of time. I'm sure that there's lots of other questions that people may have. If anybody has questions, how do they get a hold of you, or how do they get a hold of Spring Ridge Academy?
They can absolutely send us an email at www.springridgeacademy.com, or they could simply call me. Okay. At 928-632-4602, and I'm extension 102, and I'd be glad to get back to them and talk over with them what's going on and give them some guidance or answers or be of whatever help I can be.
All right, and in 30 seconds, can you give me one of your favorite success stories?
Oh, gosh. Favorite success story, two divorced parents with a girl at Spring Ridge Academy. The girl was the only child as a result of the union. And on one hand, a couple of a parent and grandparent who had also been very involved in the child's life And we ended up being able to bring all of them, all five of them together, parents and grandparents coming to the workshop along with mom and dad. Mom and dad didn't even want to attend the same workshop, but we made sure they were in different small groups so they had privacy and confidentiality. And as we worked up through the family workshops, everyone was involved, and this kid ended up with a support system that she thought she'd never have.
Well, and that's beautiful, and it's a multi-generational win. I like that. Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show. I would love to do this again. You've brought a lot of great information. Until next week, folks, go out there, seek to catch someone doing something good every day, and it will help you. It will help your kids. If you have any other questions that you have for Gary or any of our other guests, you can go to our website, www.answers4thefamilyblog.com. You can suggest topics. You can suggest guests, and you can gather information. We'll have a little information on Spring Ridge on our site if you want to check that out. Gary, again, thank you so much.
Hey, Alan, thanks for having me, and thanks for this opportunity to talk to the folks.
All right. Good day.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.